Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. Earlier this year, we interviewed Katie Plohacki, founder and director of Tulsa's Healthy Community Store Initiative. That initiative is an umbrella for several programs that Plohacki runs, including RNG Grocers, Tulsa's mobile grocery store, Cooking for Health, a program that brings farm-fresh food and nutrition to vulnerable populations, and a farm-to-table catering service. Plohacki is also the mastermind behind the annual Oklahoma Food Security Summit, which took place last month at Tulsa Community College's Northeast Campus. An all-day event, the Food Security Summit covers many topics, but one that caught my attention was one that Plohacki presented herself, another of her more recent programs called Hands to Harvest. Hands to Harvest is in the business of gleaning, what the USDA defines as the act of collecting excess fresh food from farms, gardens, farmers markets, grocers, restaurants, state county fairs, or any other sources in order to provide it to those in need. Plohacki gleans from local sites that for a number of reasons aren't able to harvest all they grow, from the cosmetics of the produce to labor issues and soil needs. Some farmers simply plow crops under to replenish soil. Using volunteer labor, Plohacki sends out a call, and folks head to the farm to collect unharvested crops, wash them, and distribute them via the mobile grocery or to local food pantries. Her talk at the Food Security Summit was inspiring and informative, and I asked her back to discuss food security and her gleaning practices. Katie Plohacki of Tulsa's Healthy Community Store Initiative is my guest today on Studio Tulsa Medical Monday. Katie Plohacki, welcome back to Medical Monday. Last month, you hosted the Oklahoma Food Security Summit. What were some of your take-homes from there? What kinds of things will you be working on for next year?
Well, we always work on policy, and probably the biggest one is a Healthy Food Financing Act. We've been working on a legislative study to look at food access all the way across Oklahoma, and we're going to hopefully get a bill this year authored to create an act that will provide funding opportunities for people to open grocery stores in rural and urban food deserts.
Wow. So what are some of the barriers to them doing that now?
Financing.
Uh-huh. And the proposed legislative act will somehow ease that?
It'll provide opportunities for us to fundraise. Number one, the federal government, USDA, has a Healthy Food Financing Act, which provides grants. And with this act through Oklahoma, we'll have a larger opportunity to go after some of those federal grants.
That sounds very worthwhile. So one of the things that was a take-home for me from the Oklahoma Food Security Summit was I got to hear you present about gleaning, G-L-E-A-N. It sounds funny when I say it, gleaning. And I guess those in the farming community certainly know what it is, and there's, I think, some biblical passages about it. But basically, the idea is that not all crops are harvested, and so essentially there's a lot of food that could go to waste. And so gleaning really is the act of recovering that food loss or potentially lost food and then putting it to use and feeding hungry people or making a match between those who don't have and that might go wasted. So how did you come to get interested in gleaning? And if you could, tell us how you go about it.
Well, the interesting statistic is that $6 billion worth of food never leaves our farms every year. That's $6 billion with a B, pretty big. I first became interested, I was taking a farm tour across Oklahoma, and as we went to each of these farms, I noticed there was produce being left in the fields, and I didn't understand why because it looked perfectly good to me. And when I asked about this, I was told that it didn't grade properly. You know, we notice in the grocery stores, every bit of our produce looks exactly the same. It's the same length. It's the same circumference.
Color, right?
Color. So they said if it doesn't grade, there's a blemish, it's ugly. And I love ugly produce. They just leave it in the fields to rot. It's too much work to pick it, to box it, and to essentially take it to a food bank, which is why what I asked them why they didn't do that. They said it was just they didn't have the time or the labor to do that.
So from their experience, they know it's going to be rejected essentially, and so they just make an effort to kind of avoid that which will be rejected on a visual level or a measurement level or something.
Yes.
And so gleaning, then you come in and are happy to take that food and
yes.
then bring it where it might be needed.
Yeah, the second instance was my farmer, a local gentleman that I get a lot of my produce from, I was going down to pick some peas and I saw this watermelon field and from Michigan, I never saw a watermelon field before and I took a picture and it was glorious and he told me he was plowing it under that weekend and I was horrified. And so I asked him if I could come back with some help and pick the watermelons, and we did. We saved 300 to 400 watermelons, and we gave them away for at least a month.
Wow. Now, do you run into a problem of preserving that produce as well? I mean, is that an issue, storage?
Yes, storage is an issue. Preserving is an issue. Even, you know, picking it, washing it is all an issue. It takes a lot of labor to do that. So we ask for volunteers to come help us. We don't always have a lot of volunteers. But the interesting thing about preserving, which I do a lot of, is I do have a commercial kitchen. So we try to bring it back and dehydrate, freeze. We put it into prepared meals for seniors. We give it away at community events, food on the move, cooking for kids. So we make sure that it gets used quite quickly.
Now, you have a name for this part of your organization. You're the executive director of Healthy Community Store Initiative, and this part of it is Hands to Harvest, which it sounds like is really just you and anyone you can get. But how long have you been doing this Hands to Harvest program, if you want to call it that?
About 2 years. I started last year, and I would just kind of do a quick Facebook going to the farm. If anybody wants to come with me and learn about agriculture or help me pick, I can fit 4 people in the car. So people would say, hey, that sounds like fun. I'd like to go. And I'd say, okay, meet me at 5 a.m. And then some people would go, oh, yeah, not so much. But, you know, it's important in the summertime. You have to be on the field as soon as the sun comes up, because you have to be off the field as soon as it heats up, because the produce does not like to be picked hot, and we don't want our people to be hot either. So we started about a year ago, and I realized that I wasn't even putting a dent in just this one farm that I was working with. And so we did some fundraising to get a bus, because transportation is an issue. One of our thoughts was to be able to take people down. They could help us harvest, and then they get to take some home, and then we use the rest for other purposes. So we were able to buy a bus, so we take field trips down to the farm. And storage capacity was our next issue. I was wanting to build a walk-in cooler, and we ran across a refrigerated truck, and so it was less expensive to buy the truck than it was to build a walk-in cooler. So we now have an ice cream truck. Because, again, you need to get that produce into climate control in order to preserve its life.
Does your ice cream truck play music? I have to ask.
It does not, but we could make it do that. It's pretty large, but to, yeah, easy to do.
You have to come up with a unique song or a unique, you know, it's like, yeah. Katie, the farm gleaning
yeah.
is coming.
So we're building our capacity. There's so much out there. 21% of our landfills is actually filled with food waste. It gets thrown away.
21% of everything in our landfill is food waste.
Yes.
Wow. That's kind of shocking, because I saw something recently that showed, you know, we're putting, I guess, something like 55% of all of our post-consumer waste goes into landfills, whereas in parts of Europe where they have recycling programs or they're able to convert waste into energy, mm-hmm. it's something like 1% goes into landfills. So you're talking about this massive amount of stuff going to landfills, and a fifth of it is food waste.
Yes.
Which, and of course, the maldistribution, we have people going hungry. So it's unfortunate.
Yeah, and that's really what our mission is of Hands to Harvest, is the fact that, you know, 100 billion pounds of food in the U.S. gets wasted, and that's across not just farms, that's across our grocery stores, our food services, what we lose in our homes. And we have 49 million people, 16 million of those are children in our country that are going hungry. So our mission really is to address both issues by saving the food and making sure it gets to somebody who's hungry.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa. It's Medical Monday. I'm John Schumann. My guest is Katie Plahocki, Executive Director of the Healthy Community Store Initiative. And we're talking about one of their programs, Hands to Harvest, which involves gleaning, which is the process of saving crops that would otherwise be unharvested or go to waste, and trying to both distribute them and preserve them and bring them to folks who might be hungry. The obvious advantages of that, Katie, are, you know, as we pointed out, you know, not letting food go to waste, not get stuck in landfills, but also providing a meal to folks who are hungry. What might be some of the disadvantages of gleaning? I mean, you had sort of both sides of the...
Well, it's seasonal. We only grow crops, like, you know, right now is fall and it's the perfect time. We're really rushing to get excess food out of the fields because we're expecting a frost in the next week or so. Once that frost hits, it'll ruin everything. So we're actively trying to make sure we get all those crops off. Sometimes in weather events, it may be a really short notice, so you may only have 24 hours to get volunteers together or to be able to get down there and get those crops off. So it's unpredictable. It's very labor intensive. You got to pick it, you got to transport it, you got to wash it, you got to preserve it, you got to get it to whoever the end user is going to be. Building capacity and infrastructure for that, again, transportation, you have to have the vehicles and the trailers to be able to haul a whole lot of food. And then coordinating volunteers. can be really difficult sometimes.
Well, yeah, because you're looking for people who are available on kind of a short notice who are truly volunteers, because anyone sort of with a regular job where they have to go to an office for, you know, 9 to 5, it's going to be really challenging for them to, unless, of course, you mentioned the summer, they could get up at 5 and put in a few hours before work. But generally, is that one of your limiting barriers?
It is. You know, people work, so that's hard. I just did actually what I called a happy hour harvest Friday night, thinking, oh, everybody will get out of work and come over for a happy hour harvest, because we had about 300 pounds of green beans we needed to pick. And I had a family of about 5 show up. But it was fun because we are family friendly and the kids had a blast and they ate a lot of green beans.
Another thing that you have mentioned to me that's an initiative really that came as something that you've worked on at various food security summits over the years is farm to school. And this is something that's particular. We hear a lot about farm to table, and in the restaurant industry tends to be kind of high end, that locavores and people who want to eat locally grown food and know where their food is sourced, that they're willing to kind of pay a premium for in fancier restaurants. But farm to school, educate us about what is meant there.
That's actually providing healthier meals to our students by getting locally grown produce into the schools for the children to eat. The difficulties around that is, you know, for example, TPS, we have 43,000 plus students. That's a lot of students. So you have to be able to aggregate enough food to feed all those students.
In multiple locations.
The other problem is the school policy is that the farms have to be certified. So sometimes a lot of the local farms don't have good agricultural practices certification. They don't have their HACCP plans in place. We have to backhaul, so we have to find transportation trucks to actually pick it up from the farm and get it to the schools. They also make the farmers have the certification. If they don't, then they won't use those farms.
Now, is that a certification from the school district, or a
no,
certification
from
the USDA?
Yeah, well, it's neither, funny enough. GAP, which is Good Agricultural Practices, there are third-party auditors that come in and will audit your practices, and there's actually a guideline of what you have to follow in order to get certified. And there are several levels of certification. So it's a lot of reporting, a lot of paperwork, so a lot of the farmers don't want to do it, and it's also expensive. So if you don't have these certifications, then you can't sell to the schools. Backhauling the product can be a barrier as well. You have to find other folks that may be going somewhere, so they will backhaul at a reduced price instead of paying the full price of transportation.
When you say backhaul, you're talking about stuff that's gleaned, you mean, to get ready for
school? Well, backhaul is, let's say, Go Fresh goes to Oklahoma City to drop off some product to some of their customers. They could pick up from a farm in Oklahoma City and bring it back to Tulsa.
Hauling the way back. Got it.
Yeah, okay. So it would be hauling. Instead of bringing an empty truck back, we would pay a smaller charge for that transportation, and they would bring it back to the schools. So there's a few barriers. We've been working diligently on it. There is a farm-to-school coordinator in the state of Oklahoma that works under the Department of Ag. And so she tries to help coordinate some of the with the farmers and some of the backhaulers and the schools to bring that all together. There's just a lot of money that we spend in our schools for food that's not so healthy, that if we could spend that same or even a portion of those dollars with our farmers, we're keeping that money local, and it actually boosts our income or our economic diversity of our farms. They make more money. They buy more tractors and more equipment. It's, you know, kind of that keeping the dollar flowing in the community. So there's an economic boom or advantage for buying locally. Three advantages.
Back to that certification question. When I think about certifications for farms, and I'm picturing like the farmers market, say the Cherry Street Farmers Market, where many of the producers, if not all of them, I think, are certified organic, which I think of as a fairly high threshold to cross to be USDA certified organic or Oklahoma State organic. Is that a certification that would meet the criteria for schools? Or
that's a different certification.
It's totally different.
And
okay.
They have a different auditor. That really is just an audit to make sure that they're not using any chemicals, pesticides, herbicides that aren't allowed under that certification. They could be organically certified but not have GAP certification.
Wow. And so it's
a lot to do with food safety.
So one would think, of course, that anyone selling organic product, and there's probably a premium for that, would, of course, adhere to practices and principles that are going to have the highest safety. But, of course, you still have to.
I think most farms do. We certainly don't, as small farmers or any mid farmers, any farmer does not want to hurt anybody through, you know, listeria or some type of bacterial problem. So I think everybody takes care of, you know, their crops to the best of their ability. It's just the cost of the paperwork. If, let's say, if you're a diversified farm and I grow 12 different things, I would have to have a plan, a written plan for all 12 things. And it's quite extensive paperwork. And then you have to keep, you know, you're testing your water and you're testing your soil and you're taking measurements and keeping track of all kinds of different things. You know, the biggest part is, you know, how do you keep deer out of your field? You know, if there's a wild animal running through and going to the bathroom in your crops, you know, that's hard to deal with. So you start doing that on the other end where you're actually washing and prepping the food after you pick it, which is very important, a very important part of the plan.
So it sounds in some ways like the law of unintended consequences. So these regulations are designed to protect us, the consumer, the end user, and that's great. But here, you know, the perfect might be the enemy of the good, because you're talking about a lot of regulations, and for a smaller mid-sized farmer growing a number of crops, it sounds like the bureaucracy and paperwork is sort of onerous, as well as the cost to the farmer. So in a sense, those regulations, you can see incentivizing monocrop agriculture on a macro scale. And here, you know, that's sort of everything a locavore doesn't like, right, is the corporate agriculture that's monocrop that depletes vital nutrients from the soil and just is growing, you know, acres and acres and acres of soybeans or corn. And I was not aware of this is really a problem. I mean, it's tough. I think that's really, you've pointed out something that's sort of difficult to kind of wrap your head around.
Yes, but there are ways to fix it. If there's a barrier, I say find a way to fix it, whether it's legislative or policy or it's working with the farmers. There's a group of folks that are, and we worked on this actually at the last year's Oklahoma Food Security Summit, working on doing some group gap certification where we can take some farmers and in a group be able to certify them all at the same time. Until recently, we didn't even have a third-party auditor in the state of Oklahoma. You'd actually have to hire someone and pay for them to come from another state to do the audit for you. So that's where a lot of that cost.
So the collectivization, in a way, makes it a little bit easier. I mean, it reminds me of like small companies kind of pooling to get health insurance at a better rate or something like that.
Yes.
I mean, deal with the bureaucracy somewhat on a more collective level to try to get an economy of scale. So let's go back to gleaning for a second, because right on your website, essentially, or where it's a Hands to Harvest, it's really talks about the process of recovering food waste to feed people, and that's really intuitive, and we understand it's like if crops don't get harvested, they're just going to sort of die on the vine, so you're harvesting them. But to feed, not only feed people, but feed livestock and the soil. Can you talk a little bit about livestock and the soil?
Sure. We on my farm, we raise livestock, pigs, goats, chickens. I tell my pigs they need their plates to be filled with half fruits and veggies, just like the people do. So we actually, not gleaning, because it's probably a different word, but we source waste from several grocery stores here locally and also some food service. And so that food, and again, instead of going into the trash and going into the landfill, we bring it back and we feed our animals, our chickens and our goats. They love produce as well. They get to eat produce. And then what isn't edible for livestock, we actually compost. And we're building our composting capacity in order to be able to give that compost back to school and community gardens, because there's a huge need for that as our community gardens grow.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa. It's Medical Monday. I'm John Schumann. My guest is Katie Plohacki. She's executive director of the Healthy Community Store Initiative. And one of their programs is Hands to Harvest, which features gleaning, the process of saving farm waste or food that would otherwise be unharvested or wasted. And Katie, you were referring to recovering food waste to help with the soil and composting. It turns out there's a huge demand for compost, isn't there?
It is. It's the best way to amend your soil and to provide nutrients. Soil feeds our plants, so we have to feed the soil. using compost is the best way. It's not just produce that goes into the compost. You also have to have your green and your brown mixes, your leaves, your green waste, which we also put our plant waste, like the tomatoes. I pulled all the tomatoes up and the plants went into the compost pile. It needs water. It needs heat. It needs to be able to heat up. We also take in another roundabout way, all the manure and the straw from our animals and also put that in the compost pile. So that just makes a really super great mixture. Just for an example, I live up in sort of the Osage Hills, but in Tulsa County. And so we have a lot of rock and a lot of clay. and my soil looks a completely different just in 2 years of using layers of compost and straw to amend that soil. And there's no side effects from chemicals that are not naturally made.
I.e. not using fertilizer.
Not using fertilizer.
Needing it because you don't have nutrient-depleted soils. In fact, you're creating soil that's actually nutrient-rich.
Yes. We never had a worm to be found, and I can just dig, and there's worms everywhere, so that's a great sign.
And we want to point out that's a good thing.
That's
farming,
a good thing.
Worms, yes.
Worms
okay,
are a good thing.
Right. I just want some – not all listeners will necessarily know that. So how does one know when compost is ready to be placed in the field? I mean, because am I right that you grow it in bins or barrels, or not grow it, but you know what I'm saying?
Yes. There's a lot of different ways you can do it.
Because
we do so much, I just have a giant pile. We actually bought a tractor that had a front end loader when our other tractor broke, just so we could turn the piles with the front end loader. It needs to be at temperature for a certain number of days. If you're going to put it directly onto your field and grow crops in it, it needs to be composted for at least 90 days and 120 if you're doing root vegetables. So if you're planting a plant such as strawberries the leaves are not on the ground, you can compost it for 90. But if you're going to be putting in the dirt with root vegetables and certain other foods that will come into contact with that soil, it really needs to be 120 days. So there's some and that's if you're using manure. If you're not using manure, because I do, then that's a whole different. There's not a certain number of days you have to wait if there's no manure involved.
Oh, you mean
if it's just plants, you can. And it just depends on how hot. The hotter it is, and the more you circulate it and keep it wet, the faster it will decompose. In fact, we're looking at building an in-vessel, which is a giant drum on a trailer that will be mobile, of course. And you can actually compost within 3 to 4 days in this large drum. It actually will make one rotation.
3 to 4 days
per day.
That's amazing.
Yes. So it just depends on how you do it.
Basically how you cycle it.
How you cycle it. But manure, if you're adding livestock manure, that's a whole different
You have to wait enough
yeah.
time for the bacterial
yes.
bacteriology to change. So but you mentioned to me this growing demand for compost where you are using it in your own farm, your own farming practices, but that there are many sort of customers, so to speak, on your rounds in the community, or any grocers or other folks that you work with who are interested in compost. Who are some of those potential customers?
Yeah, community gardens, school gardens. I get calls from people a lot wanting to know, especially in the springtime, where they can get free dirt or free compost, whether they are amending their soil for the next growing season or whether they're wanting to start a new community or school garden and they just don't have the funds to go buy the dirt. So I went, ha-ha, we should make more compost and be able to supply that, because really it's almost free. You're taking the waste. There's a whole round of people that in the fall, they go around and they know when garbage day is or green waste day is in different neighborhoods, and they'll go around and pick up the bags of leaves before the garbage man will get to them.
Well, because of course, so they're getting essentially free fuel.
Yes.
And then preventing it essentially from going
yes,
in the landfill.
Right now, pumpkins is a perfect prime example.
Pumpkins are a great idea.
Yes, would love. I think I took several pumpkins out of a neighborhood a couple nights ago because they were sitting out for the dump for the trash to pick up. And so we just stopped and threw them in the truck.
Wow. So looking ahead, what in terms of gleaning and or compost, I mean, you mentioned some new equipment that might help you with your composting practices. But back to gleaning, if you could have sort of a blank slate or a blank check, I guess, what would you do? I mean, you mentioned volunteers as a particular. So, I mean, thinking about robots, I guess, or somebody
yeah.
who could get out in the field and get up at early hours and do the sort of backbreaking work of the harvesting. But shy of that, I mean, what kinds of things would help gleaning either locally or nationally, where we would have a better matchup of food demand to food production that would lessen the mismatch?
Yeah, we need an app for that.
I'm actually
Lynn Malley, who with OSU, she's with Solid Waste Management. She actually came from Stillwater the other day, Saturday, to help me pull green beans. And we were talking about this app that they have in other areas where you can match up not only farms who have supply, but also volunteers. And by everybody downloading that app, you can communicate with everybody in a much more efficient way to say, hey, we're going out tomorrow and this is what we're doing. I need 20 volunteers, and people can sign up through this app. So that's really one of the hardest things for me is coordinating volunteers quickly and getting the job done. I think there's a lot of people who really want to go out. Everybody that's come out with me has loved doing it. You know, you get out in nature. The kids love it. It's, you know, kind of like your Zen moment. You get away from the rest of the world and everything. So I think there's the volunteers are out there. It's just getting that coordination and being able to let people know when the trips are, or when we're going down, and what's needing to be harvested.
But beyond the matching of, you know, volunteers to the need, I mean, I'm thinking too of the app that would also make a match between who's in need of food and where there's a large supply, almost like you could create a market, if you will, or a free market in a sense for, hey, we're, you know, we're in the school district and there's, I don't know, not that there would ever be a shortage of whatever, but or hey, dear school district, we happen to have a surplus of tomatoes this week. Wouldn't it be nice for your kids to get fresh tomatoes? Of course, you have all those other barriers. You mentioned like accreditation of the farm or certification, but you know, a matching resource for that as well, because that's where it seems like a lot of this sort of problem has arisen that gleaning is purported to solve.
And we're actually working on that. The Tulsa Health Department actually received a grant and has a gentleman that they've hired that's working on food forests. And he's actually working on a GIS map that will let people know where food forests are available to go glean just as an individual. So I know that I may be able to go over to the Osage Trail in another couple years and pick pecans or pears or apples. So they actually are working on an app through that grant just with regards to food forest. And that's something new that we're doing here in Tulsa. The Tisdale Food Forest, which runs along the Tisdale Expressway, has been operating now for a couple of years. We'll be putting one out at Challenger Park. We're putting one in at Emerson Elementary and Walt Whitman Elementary. So these are public spaces and shared use, so people will actually be able to go on site and glean themselves from these fruit and nut trees.
So food forest, the idea being these are in a sense wild or at least planted trees or food producing plants.
Purposeful gleaning.
Purposeful gleaning. And so I guess then that always makes me a little bit worried about like the so-called tragedy of the commons. What's to stop one entity from going out and, you know, picking all the fruit and then, you know, trying to sell it or something? Or you just rely on people's good nature?
Yeah, sometimes you just gotta, you know, you just gotta go with it. You know, there may be somebody that tries to take advantage of going out and getting all the pecans before anybody else does so they can sell them. But, you know, there's a lot of people that will get that food and that needs it, and as long as it's being cleaned up. And I think people is, you know, my idea is to almost have these like little pocket parks. So you have the community that's invested in maintaining and keeping it clean and getting the fruit taken care of before it rots. And I think there'll be some self-policing. You can't always 100% have a perfect plan, but I think do it, see what happens. And if people are being fed, then that.
So much the better.
The better.
So who's, is it the Tulsa Health Department that's growing those food forests?
Well, there's different entities. Nathan Picard is really the head of the food forest along the Tisdale. Up With Trees is a partner with him, and they're partnering with some other projects. And there are several other collaborators that are all coming together to make sure that some of these are happening. For planting trees, why not plant trees that produce food? It also provides an educational component for the kids to be able to get out there and work with these plants and this food.
Well, Katie Plohacki, as always, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. I've learned a lot, and thank you so much for teaching us about gleaning.
You're welcome.
Katie Plohacki is Executive Director of the Healthy Community Store Initiative, and we spoke today about Hands to Harvest, her program for gleaning, which is taking what would be farm waste and repurposing it to useful food. Katie Plohacki is founder and director of Tulsa's Healthy Community Store Initiative. Hands to Harvest is one of their programs. Well, that's our show for this Medical Monday. Studio Tulsa is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. If you've missed a recent show or even one from long ago, you can listen online anytime. Just use your smartphone, tablet, or computer. Go to our website, studiotulsa.org. For Studio Tulsa, I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. Thanks for listening.